So if you could be here around 9, that would be great. Okay?
Well, listen here.
Hi, I'm Miss H.
And I'm obviously Mr. O.
And today we are going to talk about episodes, is it 7 and 8?
7 and 8, yes.
Seven
and 8. We're going to double it up and knock this thing out.
We are doubling it up because what we found is that these episodes are a little bit harder to get through than the beginning because they're kind of out in the real world. Things are just kind of, you know, real life is happening, which good for them, but a little bit less entertaining for us. So we thought it was dragging on. So we're going to double up from here on to the end of the season.
Yeah, which I think it's the right call because we talked about it. It's just, oh man, it's great. The better people's lives are for them, the less interesting TV it becomes.
Yeah.
And so we have a couple of couples here that are just kind of settling into this groove where they're really vibing with each other, and it just makes their segments really boring.
Right, definitely. Okay, so why don't you go ahead and start off?
All right, so speaking of the couples that are vibing with each other, Cam and Lauren, there's two episodes that we covered, and the first episode was like a Meet the Parents episode. So in the Meet the Parents episode, we first meet Lauren's mom, who is joking around with Lauren before Cameron comes back home. When he does, he goes immediately into impress the mom mode, which honestly is probably a strong suit for Cameron. Mm-hmm. He talks about how much he loves Lauren and even gives the old classic, I can see where she gets her good looks routine. And it's also during this scene that we learn Cameron used to be in a rap group back in college.
God.
And Lauren takes this opportunity when she knows he won't say no to her, to get him to do a little freestyle for us. And I was a little surprised about how good he did. I'd say like in rhymes he was like a B minus, but his flow was a little high. I'd give him like a B. All right, so all in all, pretty good first impression for mom. But Lauren is a little worried because mom was the easy one. And next up is a meeting with dad. Pamela, Lauren's mom, has warned Cameron that Bill, who is Lauren's dad, is very protective. And Lauren worries about how Bill, who she describes as very vocal in the black community, will react to her white fiance. They get to Bill, and he's kind of leaning into that intimidating dad thing a little bit. He says he has a million questions and does it all, you know, kind of lean back with his hand on his chin, like, He says he has a million questions, but he doesn't intend for it to be a gauntlet. He asks if Cameron is going to ask for his blessing, and then Lauren gets uncomfortable and leaves. Once she does, Dad says he wants to gauge how familiar Cameron is, we said the white fiance thing, with the black community that Bill is such a big part of. At one point, he just point blank asks, have you ever been in a room full of black people before? Cameron explains that before Lauren, he was in another interracial relationship, so he's kind of familiar with the dynamic. And Bill ends up saying that while he wants to get to know Cameron better, if Lauren loves him, he likes him. Later in the show, we see them planning the guest list for the wedding, and Lauren shares how stressed and nervous she is for the wedding, which makes Cameron feel ill at ease. After, Lauren meets with her friend Tiffany to tell her the news about her engagement and invite her to be in the bridal party. But nothing really major comes out of that. So I don't know. There wasn't really a whole lot of interesting stuff going on relationship-wise in this. I thought Bill's question was kind of interesting. So I'll start there. Have you ever been in a room full of black people?
Definitely not. Not like a room specifically. Yeah.
I thought it was an interesting question because it's such a simple question, but really gets at the heart of a lot of what goes on. In terms of, you know, racial dynamics in the country, because
right.
I personally teach in a district that is majority black. Like it's very, very black district. So I have been in, you know, I there's a lot of times when I'm the only white guy in the room and the rest of the room is full of black people and I'm comfortable enough in there. But just the fact that when you ask that question to so many people, they kind of have to think and be like, wait, I don't know if I ever have. It kind of, you know, it's striking to me. I don't think it's, you know, good or bad if you have or haven't. You know, it's just your circumstances. But I thought it was interesting to gauge things.
Right, because you're right. You don't have control over, like, yeah, let's round up the black people and put them in a room so I can be in, you know. So it is
exactly.
A matter of circumstance. But I think the other thing that's interesting is, I guess, if you've never stopped to actually think about it before.
Right.
You know, like, I haven't ever stopped to think about, have I? And come to think of it, I used to work at a government agency for a year because I had a fellowship. And I would say that there were a couple of times where I wouldn't say a room full, but definitely a large part of the room was, you know, so, but I don't know if it ever occurred to me at the time, you know, but looking back on it, I think that might be the closest.
Yeah. They've done a bunch of studies and stuff, and it's really interesting where they have, you know, they'll ask people of color, like, you know, situations about, like, did you think there was diversity in that room or something like that, right?
Sure.
And for most of the people of color, they say that a room was diverse when it was like half, maybe half white or less than half white, right? Whereas when you ask white people the same question, they say it was diverse once it was like 15% non-white. Something like that, like a really low amount.
And I can definitely see that.
Just those difference of perspectives is, I think it's fascinating myself.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. So kind of going along with that, Lauren mentions that she talks about a black family structure. And I was like, what does that mean? I even did an internet search on it because I was like, is this like a known thing that I've just never heard of? And I couldn't find it anywhere. So, I mean, I'm making the assumption that when she's talking about black family structure, she just means that the couple involved are both black. It was my assumption.
Possibly. And I think she was talking a little bit about, because, you know, it's one of those things where people make assumptions based on things that she obviously doesn't have all that much experience with white families, right? Based on what we've seen from her. And so a lot of times there's a lot of assumptions about white families that, oh no, it's just a mom and a dad and the kids and that's it. And my family, you know, the aunties are there and the cousins are there and everybody's all together. And like my aunt is a second mom and this is all, and that multi-generational thing. And people tend to think that that's either unique to their ethnicity or unique to their race. And it's like something that somebody else might not be used to. So I think that's kind of what she was going with, like this more huge, big, larger family rather than just like the nuclear family unit.
I wasn't sure if you knew if it was a thing, but I was like, I don't know what you mean by black family structure, but yeah. Because the things that when I did my internet search, didn't point to some kind things. And what I mean by that, not like so kind, but like saying things like, it's only a single parent.
Right.
You know, like.
Yeah, stereotypical stuff like that.
I don't think that's what she meant here. Because they're talking about getting married, you know?
They're talking about getting married. And she has two parents that they're not together anymore, but she said they got divorced. I mean, it's not like she's talking about like some sort of weird, I don't know. It's definitely a super stereotypical thing. And I'm not surprised you found it, that a lot of people just assume that no black people know their dad. That's not what she was talking about at all, clearly.
Right. I didn't assume that that's what she was talking about, but that's what I mean by it wasn't so kind, because that's the other thing too, is like divorce isn't exclusive, or single parenting is not exclusive to black people.
Absolutely.
Like, let's
not.
Be real here. There are plenty of single parents out there across all ethnicities. So, the internet. Why are you so racist, internet?
I know. Okay, to get off that, I really liked Lauren's dynamic with her mom.
Yeah, her mom is so cute. Her mom's voice sounds really young.
Mm-hmm. I can hear that.
Yeah, she has like this cutesy voice. And Cameron, I think when he was like kind of flattering the mom, he wasn't wrong. Like Lauren very much takes after her mom, which bodes well for him, because if Lauren ages like her mom, you kind of know what you're in for in the future. So good for you, Cameron, for finding that attractive, because this is going to be your wife later.
That's the preview. Right.
Yep.
Yeah, definitely. I just really liked how they had a playful relationship. And before Cameron came in, Lauren was like doing the mom voice and be like, y'all, your eggs are going to shrivel up. And like, when are you going to find a man? I thought it was hilarious.
I mean, her parents seem pretty cool, even though the dad was a little bit hard on Cameron. Like at the end of the day, he said, you know, like, well, if Lauren loves you, that means I like you. And I mean, I think that's a pretty good start. You know, you can't come in and expect dad to love you.
I think he was actually pretty cool. And I think they gave him the harshest edit they could, and he still was pretty cool. Like, I definitely think they wanted it to seem like this is the big, you got to impress me, macho, ask my permission, dad. And they did it as much as they could. But at the end, he was still like, if she loves you, I like you. Like, Okay.
Right.
You can't really ask for them a whole much better than that.
The last thing that I'll say about them, you said that you thought that Cameron's rapping was pretty good. I had cringy secondhand embarrassment when he was rapping. I was like, can this stop now, please?
Rapping out of context is always awkward. Like, anytime somebody's like, rap for me, and someone raps, I don't care if you're Kendrick Lamar, that's going to sound weird. But I was just trying to be like, okay, absent context, because rapping to your mother-in-law in your kitchen is weird.
Yeah.
But I was like, I was saying his rhymes were not great. He had some sketchy rhymes in there, but he was okay with his flow. Whatever. I'm grading on a curve.
I mean, I'm not saying it's bad, because I don't think it was bad. It was just embarrassing. Like, I was embarrassed for him.
Yes. Yeah. I'm saying the doing it is embarrassing. But
yeah. All right. Let's go ahead and move on. Let's move on to Kenny and Kelly. So we open on them on their way to Kelly's parents. So while in the car, Kenny sends a detailed text message to Kelly's mom. Kelly then reveals that Kenny reminds her of her dad because he is all about the details. Kelly's mom asks Kelly what made her fall for Kenny without seeing him. Kelly brought up the fact that they had the same favorite childhood book. Kelly's mom was open to this process because her and Kelly's dad had a very fast courtship, and they had been married for 38 years. Kelly's mom says that she's happy about gaining a son. Kenny loves her parents and thinks they will get along well with his parents, Jeff and Marcia, who joined them shortly after. We find out that Kenny's parents also dated for a short time before they got married. We also get to meet Ashley, Kelly's older sister, later when they go wedding dress shopping. So Ashley cries when she realizes that things are changing. So she cries when she sees Kelly in the wedding dress. We next see Kenny and Kelly making out in bed, but they also talk about the fact that they haven't had sex. Kelly still wants to wait. She brings up past precedents of not being emotionally connected, and she brings up her fear of not being able to have an orgasm, which she thinks is related. Kenny is a little uncomfortable because he's never talked in details of the female orgasm with anyone before. He says he gets it, and they just kiss goodnight. Yeah, so have you ever had that kind of conversation outside of your ex-wife? Because I feel like if you've been married that long, like, you know, it's bound to come up, but they're still kind of in their dating phase.
Yeah. So, I mean, okay. So it's, I think it's a different thing whether you're talking about, you know, somebody you're married to, somebody you're dating.
Yeah.
And somebody that you never have any intention of having sex with at all. Right. That those are three different categories of people with varying levels of comfort. I don't know. I don't know. If you can't tell people what you want and what you like and you're uncomfortable talking about that, then how are you ever going to be satisfied? So I get if you're uncomfortable even talking about it, then it's not going to be good.
Right. Okay. So the uncomfortableness of it is like, I think how you kind of grew up with it, right? So was your family open about it? Maybe even if your parents weren't open about it, are you openly talking about this with your siblings? You know, do you have someone to kind of like normalize like this kind of conversation? And it just seems like Kenny hasn't talked about it with people, and that's why. But then also, like, this kind of also goes to show that maybe he isn't as close to Kelly as he kind of thinks they are, because like I said, I just made the assumption that you and your ex-wife had talked about it because you had been married for quite a few years. Yeah. And so this is a conversation that is bound to have come up, right? Because you're at that point in your relationship. So it's kind of like, if Kenny's still awkward and like uncomfortable about it, maybe he's not at that point in his relationship with Kelly.
I mean, but my immediate thought is, man, if he's never talked about, you know, orgasms with anybody, then I feel bad for all the women he slept with before. Like, that just should come up at some point. Like, that either before, after, during.
Yeah, I don't feel super comfortable having these conversations either, though. And I mean, it's because my family is super, like, uptight and conservative. And so it's one of those things where I can tell you I have never had a conversation with my sister about anything sex related. You know, it's like, obviously she's had sex. I have a niece, you know, but we have never talked about anything.
No, but I'm more or less the same way with my family, but I just feel like in my experience with in relationships, though, once, and I guess because I haven't done this yet, once we've, you know, been naked and, you know, did all the stuff, like, well, everything's on the table now. Like, why would I not just be completely open about it? I don't get it.
I don't know. I could kind of see, like, you don't want to hurt someone's feelings, you know, by being like, no, that's not good. Don't do that. It's actually really bad. Yeah, I don't know. I think especially because, you know, like you're talking about the whole naked thing. It's like, I think to me that's like vulnerability, right? So you feel like you can be open and honest. But I think for me, like, it makes me like not want to take advantage of that vulnerability and say something that's like gonna hurt you. So it's like, I don't want to be super honest if it's like negative, right? Like if it's positive, sure, I'll absolutely be honest about that, you know, because it's like you can't take that the wrong way. But
I still feel like
no.
I want constructive criticism. Like I want to make you happy. I want it to be good. And if I can make it better, then please tell me what to do. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Well, I don't know, but maybe you're doing it that way because you think it's good. It's like, well, you know, so.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So I feel like it's a different. Yeah, I'm more on board with everything's on the table. I don't care. Like, you were not going to hurt my feelings.
I'm not saying, but I don't think it's like I'm advocating for a lack of communication. I guess I'm just pointing out that, you know, it's more difficult for some people to have those kinds of conversations because they are uncomfortable or awkward, which is what Kenny is saying. So, I don't know, because Kelly was very upfront.
But she was very upfront about, but I think they kind of went hand in hand. Like she was like, you know, basically she was like, listen, this my old boyfriend pressured me into sex. And so I never enjoyed the sex, basically. I mean, she said it in other ways. Like she said the words pleasure me, which bothered me for some reason. That's like, you know, when some people bother with moist, she's like, pleasure me.
How do
like,
you expect that's, these right. conversations to go about orgasms if you don't have pleasure me?
I don't know. I don't know what I expect, but pleasure me just, I don't know. I have issues with the word pleasure.
It is weird. I feel like it's a common name for a sex store to be called the pleasure chest.
Jeez.
Mr. O is rolling his eyes so hard right now.
I liked it better. What did they call it? The sex corner. I liked that one better from the Idea Fiancé's last season with Tanya and Sinjin. The sex corner. I like that better than the pleasure chest. Ugh. But anyway, like, you know what I'm saying? Because she was not comfortable enough to, I think part of that was that she was never comfortable enough to tell him what she wanted and how she felt about it. And she felt like it was all about him and what he was doing. And so she never felt fully on board with it.
Okay. So going back to when they were meeting their parents, they had said, you know, like both their parents got married really quickly after they had met. And so it's like, how long into dating did you know that you wanted to marry your ex? Because they were saying, like, the two couples, they were saying, like, it was within a month that they got engaged.
Yeah, that seems pretty nuts.
But they've been married 38 years, so.
They have. Maybe mine's the best. Well, mine's because I was young. I would probably say, because we waited for a long time because we were young. But I would probably say within 6 months or so, probably.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Patty, the millionaire matchmaker, says you should know within a year. If not, shit or get off the pot is what she usually says.
Oh, no, I definitely agree with that. But, you know, I'm trying to think of everybody else, I think.
Well, because, I mean, all of my friends have been dating for a super long time before they ever get engaged. I mean, I don't think.
Oh, that's crazy.
I'm trying to think of the fastest. And I think it's getting a little bit better now that we're old. Like,
older.
I shouldn't say better. Shorter. Now that we're older. Like, I have a couple friends that have been dating for, like, 2 years. And then they get engaged. But I would say, like, when early 20s, like, most of my friends, like, average is 5 years before they're engaged.
Wow.
And, like, there's a lot of pushing and nudging.
I would say most of them are probably about before they're engaged. Because I have two cousins who just got married. My brother. My sister, probably about 18 months, but like between a year and 2 years. But it's also tricky because like there's a difference between when you started dating and when you started like seriously dating. right? Mm-hmm. And that might be difference, because there's definitely people who we were kind of talking for a while. We were talking for like 3 months, and then we sort of decided to really give it a go. And we were, that was really dating, and then we, you know, so. But I'm with that. A year is probably about right. If you don't know within a year, sometimes you might so like too. Have an idea within a year, and you're pretty sure, but you just got to make sure they're sure. But 5 years seems crazy.
Oh, it's like consistently with my friends, like that late. The only thing that seems to cut down the timeline is oopsie babies.
Yeah.
Yep. Oopsie babies are the only thing that really make it so it's like, oh, so we got engaged after like 2 years, and usually the kid's here already at that point.
Yeah, and I know people who are kind of went the other way. They're like, listen, like we already have 3 kids and we live together.
Yeah, why what's the point?
What's the point? Yeah, and they just right. they're just riding it out.
Okay, so moving on.
Damien and Giannina. The TLDR for this one is they fight a lot and have crazy makeup sex. But I guess yeah, I'll have to go into much. A little more detail. I couldn't follow the logic for most of their fights, and pretty much their entire segments was fights. I could only follow the logic so much. So just like all the other couples, it's meet the parent day, and they start in different rooms arguing about who initiates sex and why. It didn't start that way, but that's where it went really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
They go back and forth a lot. He throws the self-sabotage thing at her again. She throws shade on his skills in the bedroom. But I don't know. Then he says something about opening up, and then they start making out. And we assume, again, crazy makeup sex. Then they fight another time in a parking garage. It's about Damien's parents. They're supposed to drive to meet Damien's parents, you know, for the show. But they kind of backed out of the show, backed out of the meeting. And then Giannina's in the car angrily putting on like layer after layer of mascara as she blames him because his parents flaked out. And he doesn't take being blamed really well. So they fight some more. That fight might have been, if we knew the logistics of how the show worked, might have been easier to understand. But again, I was left confused. Then Giannina's family comes over, which was supposed to be the second meeting. And Damien's trying to do all the right things. He's trying to turn the charming thing on. And Giannina goes ahead and makes the whole thing awkward because they ask, why do you want to get married? And, you know, Damien has an answer of like, I've been wanting this and I was waiting for the right girl, and she's the right girl and she's perfect and look at her. And they ask her the same question. And she's like, I don't know that I do want to get married. It's like,
oh God.
So then the next fight they have is when they're working out in the condo complex. Giannina wants to have a talk about getting to the bottom of everything. But then he looks at his phone. He says it's to pause his phone. And then she goes crazy over that. And then he gets defensive and turns it into an argument about who uses social media more. And I don't know what happened there either. Then finally they're in a restaurant and they continue their social media and phone fight. And then at some point, Damien just decides he gives no more fucks and is just going to tell everything that he wants to say. So he puts it all out there about what's annoying. He said, I'm going to say everything that annoys me. And then one thing that annoys him is that Giannina says goddamn all the time. And then he talks about possibly her politics. And they don't actually go into the politics. But she says something about sending care packages back to Venezuela, whatever. But Giannina is really into this bold, I'm going to tell you what I think, Damien. And they start making out again. So clearly, this is makeup sex, fight sex, fight sex, fight sex couple, right? So which one of the fights was the dumbest? Because it was a lot of fights.
I think the initiating sex fight was the dumbest because it didn't start off that way. And I was what the hell is this fight?
Really quickly.
Yes. It started off with like him yelling at, or she was yelling at him, and then he was like all like, can you just not yell at me? And so it started off with like her justifying her yelling by saying she doesn't even realize she's doing it because that's how everybody in her family talks. And then it went from that to bringing up the bad sex and saying, have you ever noticed that I never said that it's the best sex of my life, but you have? And he's like, I did not say that. And then it's just like, what argument is this?
What, it was so weird. It just, she came out of nowhere with exactly that. Do you ever notice I didn't say it's the best? He's like, you said it was great. And she was like, yeah, great, but not the best ever. And then it was because you never started. And he's like, I never started because you only want to do it when you're mad at me. And it was like crazy.
And in fact, in my notes, I had said, what is this argument? I'm so confused. So it's funny you asked that, because I was like, I specifically identified. I was like, what is going on with this?
It was so weird.
No idea.
So weird. And yeah. It's kind of that flip side of what we talked about with Kenny and Kelly, where they're like a little bit nervous to talk about it. And this one was like way too into talking about it when it had nothing to do with anything that was going on.
Like you're definitely going to traumatize the poor guy. And he's always going to be like, am I doing it right? Am I doing it right? And you're just going to be like, oh yeah, sure you are. And it's like, he's always going to wonder in the back of his mind if she's just lying to him. And then she also says something weird. She says she lost her butterflies and she's just trying to get them back.
You're not supposed to have them all the time. That was weird.
What does that even mean? So he took that to mean that she wasn't in love with him anymore.
Yeah, but I feel like the butterflies are like the erection after Viagra. Like if they're still there after a certain amount of time, that's a problem.
Go to the hospital immediately.
Yes. That's just you having digestive problems. That's not love.
Oh, gosh. I honestly am 100% team Damien. I would not be able to handle Giannina. She is so extra about everything. I cannot handle her.
I would be on team Damien, except that he's kind of into it. I think because they had this stupid fight about who starts sex and he started sex.
Yeah, I think he was trying to be accommodating, because if your partner said that to you, like, I feel like I always initiate, you never initiate.
So by the end of this conversation, I need to initiate sex. Yeah, yeah. I'll give you that.
Right.
But it's not like you said you would nope out of there. He's not noping out of there. He's trying to make something work. I don't know. But she's pretty nuts.
Yeah, she's nuts. She's like your stereotypical, like, nuts but hot chick.
Yeah, that's true. And he's just, I guess right now, he's just still into the hot.
I don't know. So then their fight about the social media thing, what it started off with, I was on board with. And then all of a sudden, it definitely switched to who was using Snapchat or Instagram more. And I was like, I thought this was about who was on their phone while the other person is talking. What does this have to do with social media posts?
Right, right. Because he did... And I'm on board with her with his first one, right? Right. Yeah, it is very annoying to say something and have it go, what? Huh? What? Oh.
Oh, can you say that again? Sorry, I wasn't paying attention.
Oh, what? Uh-huh. Yeah, what? Yeah, that's annoying. And it does kind of show like where your mind is when, you know, you're not in the conversation. You're not in the same room with somebody, even though you're physically in the same room. But how many Instagram posts you made is irrelevant to that part of the conversation.
Right. And then also she was talking about like for work. And then it's like, well, we don't know what she does for work, does she? Is she an influencer? Is that why she's on it all the time?
Maybe. I don't know. We haven't been clear about what she is. But even if it is work, like that's still a bone of contention. Like I'm here trying to talk to you and you're working. And we're living together and you know what I'm saying? When your work never leaves your life. That is also an issue in a relationship.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I actually, one of my boyfriends was social media director or something. So he had to do media marketing or something. And so that was one of the things that definitely I struggled with him was that he was constantly on his phone. And to be honest, I think the thing that frustrated me about that was, you know, he was on his phone for work a lot, and I'm not saying that, but it's because the work kind of blends in just with your personal use of social media that it's like you're not working no one is literally working that much. Like you're on your phone using social media for your own personal use, but you could easily say it's for work.
Well, and it's easily a job that kind of will take over if you let it. Right. If it's a social media manager of some sort, because whatever you put on social media, people are interacting with that 24 hours a day.
Sure.
Right. So if you're getting DMs and you're getting people posts, you're getting replies and you feel like you need to be on that and you need to be on it because you can't wait 4 hours, because if you wait 4 hours, the moment is passed and you miss the thing and it's a thing. It can easily, if you let it, just take over everything and be a 24/7 job.
Yeah, definitely. All right. So next up we have Amber and Barnett. So Amber and Barnett are on their way to meet Amber's family. So he's nervous about the family judging him, but she says he has nothing to worry about because he's the best guy they will ever meet. Barnett notes that Amber grew up in a rough neighborhood, so he feels more at ease regarding judgment from her family. Amber immediately tells her family she is engaged, and her mom, Vicky, cries happy tears. Vicky is worried that Amber will get hurt or taken advantage of. Vicky asks if he has a job, because that seems to be the only criteria for a decent man. She then asks why he wants to marry Amber, and Barnett says he can really be himself around her. So Vicky tells him that he better take care of her. They're then on their way to meet Barnett's family. He warns her that they are very conservative and don't drink like he does. Amber recognizes she has a lot of personality and she's worried she will offend someone. Amber is shaking and nervous and needs everyone to know it. She starts drinking almost immediately and busts out the laugh snort and talks about Barnett farting on her. Deb, his mom, understands the attraction but doesn't think it's real love. Barnett notes that his family seems uncomfortable around Amber. Barnett has a private conversation with his brother where he tells his brother that he has never met someone that appreciates his brand of humor, and he feels like he can be completely himself. His brother tells him that marriage is hard work and he better be prepared to make sacrifices. We then are suit shopping, where we find out Barnett has never seen a shoehorn before. Brett, Barnett's friend, is worried for his friend. Barnett assures him that things have never been so easy and he's confident about their relationship. Barnett says the wedding is about her because she's probably been dreaming about this her whole life, whereas he hasn't thought about marriage until 2 weeks ago. Amber gets emotional when she is wedding dress shopping because she has a little shadow of a doubt that Barnett will not go through with the wedding, and she thinks that this will destroy her. As she talks about Barnett, Jessica sits back and just looks unhappy. Jessica later insists on meeting with Barnett to put everything out there. She starts off by telling him that Barnett and Amber are such a good couple. Barnett brings up his birthday party where he says that Jessica told him that she had regrets about him. Jessica is absolutely mortified that she gave Barnett and Amber the wrong impression. Jessica apologizes for giving him the wrong impression and says she had never... has never had anything but well-wishing thoughts about him, and she says that she will talk to Amber to smooth things over. She does ask him if he feels like he's making the right decision, and he says yes. In an interview, Jessica says that she has no need to ever talk to Barnett again now. Amber looks really stressed out when she meets up with Barnett later, even though she literally has no job and watches Netflix and drinks wine all day. Meanwhile, Barnett has been working nonstop. Amber talks about how the wedding dress she wants will be $400 over budget, and then continues to prattle on about all the other things she wants in the wedding. She tells Barnett that she doesn't want to ask her mom for money and wants them to pay for the wedding, which means Barnett, since Amber doesn't have a job or any plans or motivation to get a job. Amber and Barnett are talking about the potential challenges of Barnett's family not liking Amber, and then Amber demands that he take her side in public, but behind closed doors, he can tell her how he really feels. She doesn't want anyone to judge them or know about the struggles in their relationship. Okay, so I'll just start off a question with kind of how we ended. Would you still defend your partner in public if they were wrong?
Interesting. I wouldn't. It depends on what they were wrong about. Let's put it that way. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I don't think I would try to avoid, you know, publicly, you know, taking someone's side against them in public. Right. But that doesn't necessarily mean I need to back them up with what they're saying. And of course, in my head, I'm imagining like terrible scenarios. Like if my partner said something super racist, I would be like, no, right. I'm not going to take your side and defend you. Yeah. I'm going to back up on that one. I might not join in on the hate with it. I might not, you know, help everybody, you know, yell at them, but that doesn't mean I necessarily have to defend them. And so I feel like people say that and not considering like it's a case by case basis. You should have your partner's back. I mean, there's a difference between being on their side and feeling like you have to defend exactly what they're saying, I guess is my point.
Right. So we had kind of talked about this offline. Let's talk Jessica, Barnett, and like their whole meetup. Okay. So yeah. I was a little annoyed, and we had talked about this offline, that definitely production is making it seem like Jessica was so desperate to meet up with Barnett just one-on-one. And it was because she really wanted to know where things stood with them. And it definitely made it seem like that. And then almost immediately, Like, Jessica is telling them what a great couple. And that, to me, seemed a little forced. Like, she didn't need to say that. Yeah. But, yeah. But then, you know, he kind of brings up what happened at the birthday party. And all of a sudden, she is completely embarrassed. I would never want to give you the wrong idea. Oh, my gosh. I'm completely mortified that Amber thinks that I was, like, coming on to you. I better call up Amber and try to, like, make things right. So it's just like, were you really trying to... like, you know, see where you stood with Barnett? It seems like you were saying one thing in the interview, or at least that was what shown to us, and then what actually played out was something different.
Yeah, I mean, it was hard for me to focus because Barnett's hat was stupid. And
amongst other stupid Barnett things.
He had like a Bill Cosby sweater that he put into it, made into a hat. It's basically what he was wearing. Oh, God. Like, so stupid. But yeah, I see where you're coming from. It always seems like Jessica is constantly saying one thing in the interviews and another thing on the live, right? In the segments. And so, you know, like always, like she tells us, like in interviews, at the live at least, she always, always, always is telling us how she's totally all in on Mark. And Mark is the greatest. And she's so happy she has a relationship with Mark. And then in the interviews, she's showing a lot of doubt. And then, you know, we have her, and I'll talk about it later, we have her putting on the wedding dress and crying not happy tears when she puts on the wedding dress.
Very much remind me Sex in the City, where Carrie is like trying on wedding dresses just for funsies, and she like breaks out in hives because she just like got so stressed because it was like getting real. She was just like, oh my God, I can't. She's like, I'm suffocating. Take this off of me.
So I just feel like I don't know if they're trying to troll her or if she just isn't like self-aware enough to even know what she's doing or what's going on there, because that's just not the only time she says one thing in an interview and then it goes completely different on the segment.
Right. That's so true. Oh, so what do you think of Amber's like Netflix and permanent chill at home?
Yeah, I'd have a problem with that. I could
think
not.
So too.
I think I don't know who wouldn't have a problem with that. Like if I came home and you're like, you did some chores, you mowed the grass, you did some stuff, you are productive. What did you do productive today? That's fine.
I drank a bottle of wine and powered through some seasons.
Right. Yeah. No. And I was like, I did not get up at 6 a.m. and come back at 6 p.m. I did not work a 12-hour day overtime to pay for both of us so that you could sit and drink wine and do Netflix. I would have a big problem with that. And I think they will once he's kind of past this infatuation stage.
Yeah. And I definitely have a friend who was in a similar-ish situation. The person he ended up marrying had literally never worked for money her entire life. Wow. Like they had met while she was kind of in grad school. And so she had been a student her whole life and her parents paid for everything. And then right after she graduated, she like moved back in with her parents until they were married. And then when they were married and lived together, like she didn't have to work because he made enough for the both of them. And so she literally volunteered. So I don't think she ever got paid for anything. Like her entire life.
That to me is even a different situation. You volunteered. You did something productive with your time. At least if you're not making money, you did something productive with your time.
Oh, yeah. So that only lasted like a year.
I would be less likely to be resentful in that situation than somebody who's like, especially somebody who sits, drinks wine, watches Netflix, and then comes and tells me everything's over budget.
Yeah. So what happened was she volunteered for a year and then they ended up moving out of the country. And so when they moved out of the country, she didn't know anyone or anything like that. So then it became she would sit at home. And this is definitely clearly before Netflix times. She would just go shopping all day and he would come home and he would be like, food? What are we doing? She's like, oh, we'll go out to eat. So she didn't clean, she didn't cook, she didn't do anything productive at home. She just was spending his money. And so he was getting really super resentful because he's just like, okay, like you're doing the opposite. You're like not even making money. You're like negative money.
And I would also have, you know, situation dependent. If we were struggling to make ends meet and all you were doing was volunteering, I'd be like, let's maybe earn some money.
Yes. Prioritize our lives here and our jobs. Yeah,
exactly.
Definitely.
But he seems to work pretty hard. Like he seems like of all things, we you know, may make fun of him for being bro-y and douchey. I don't doubt that he's a hard worker. I really don't.
I don't think so either. And I think, like, he is proud of the fact that he owns a home. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, like, I feel like he is a little embarrassed that he doesn't own something bigger, which yes. I have actually a lot of respect for that. You know, it's like you didn't overextend yourself. You got what you could get, you know, and you should be proud that you own something, you know, like, so, I mean, I do have a lot of respect for him in that sense.
Yeah. And it's funny because we met his family and so did his family. That seems to be right in line, which I think is funny because I think part of the reason he's embarrassed for not owning something bigger is I think that's kind of in his family. He's like the screw up, like him being only owning a small home makes you like the least successful person here. Matt, what are you doing?
I mean, but he's 28, 29. He's 28, 29. Like, I was nowhere near owning anything when I was 28 or 29, you know? So it's like, good for you.
It's hard generationally, that's a word, mm-hmm. Because I'm sure his parents, I don't know about your parents, my parents are not that much older than me, but I feel like in the 70s and 80s, you could like, my parents both had jobs, but they didn't have college degrees. And it was like, oh yeah, we bought that single family home. Like, what are you, how, oh, what, right. how, what is this?
How?
And yeah. so like, and somebody look at us and you're like, how have you been working with your college degree for years and years and you still don't have a house? Like, what are you doing? Where are you blowing all your money? And it's like,
Oh, I'll tell you, I'll say why I didn't own a home in my 20s in one word. California. There's no way. Yeah. Real estate prices are ridiculous here. There's no way. I mean, they're in Georgia, but I'm assuming like Atlanta-ish area. That's like,
yeah, it's not going to be
I mean, cheap area. It's not like they're licking the backwoods.
Right. I'm in the DC area. It's not quite as bad as California, but it's up there. So it's same kind of stuff.
Barnett's mom kind of says that they're in the honeymoon phase. It's just lust.
Yeah. And his brother said the word lust mode. I'm like, why are your parents talking about lust so much? It's weird.
Gross.
Yes.
Maybe
and
they're
no.
very religious. Maybe that's why they don't drink. Yeah. And I feel like lust comes up a lot in the Bible. So
I think so. I mean, I think that's what they think. And I think they're onto something a bit. I would call it the honeymoon phase and less of like yeah. lust mode. You know, cause he's still very enamored with how she looks. He's still very enamored with her. You know, enamored enough that he's not bothered that she's not working, you know, and not yeah. doing anything productive. So that kind of sense to me is like the fact that he's not really upset about that yet means he's still in a, you know, getting to know you type phase. And he's still in an infatuation type phase rather than being totally and completely comfortable like he keeps saying he is. Mm-hmm. But I think that doesn't necessarily mean that he won't get there, which seems to be what his family was implying, especially his mom. Like, oh, once this phase is over, she'll be gone. Like he'll yeah. know he can do better than her.
All right. Okay. So we talked about Jessica a little bit. So why don't we jump into Jessica and Mark?
All right. So Jessica and Mark. We first see Mark and Jessica on the day after Jessica's drunken exchange with Barnett at his birthday party. So if you remember after they got back, at one point Jessica said like in a drunk logic yelling thing that Barnett was fucking hot. Well, it seems like one of the benefits of dating somebody who's 24 is that they still buy the, oh, I was drunk as an excuse. And Mark forgives her pretty quickly. In the next scene, we see them visiting Mark's family, and Jessica's nervous still because of the age thing. She thinks Mark's mom will, I don't know, call her a withered hag or something. I don't know what she thinks is going to happen. But anyway, when they get to dinner, we meet Rosa, Mark's mom. Remember, a couple episodes ago, he wouldn't shut up about her. Rosa wants to know how this whole dating show thing ended with them engaged. And Jessica starts off in the right foot for Rosa by kind of saying it's like confession. Rosa tells Jessica that she's totally okay with the age thing because younger women are just too crazy. And after all, Rosa got married when she was 18. So she certainly doesn't think that Mark being 24 is too young. Mark, again, during this whole dinner, will not shut up about this damn Italian beef. Later in the episode, let me see. Oh, then we have the wedding dress shopping scene where everybody else, you know, everybody brings their people and everybody seems pretty happy and is trying on the wedding dresses. But Jessica just, we mentioned this before, keeps, at least she tried on one dress and it was okay. When she tried on the second dress, she just totally lost it with some very unhappy tears. She is totally, it just all seems to be happening way too fast for her. All right, and we also see the scene we talked about where she talks to what she says with Barnett. At the end of a segment, Mark sets up a romantic date complete with dinner and fake rose petals. He sets up some kind of weird floor meal, but he sets his place in one room and her place in another room so that they can recreate the pod experience. It seems to work pretty well, because pretty soon Jessica is telling us some pretty dark stuff about how her biological father abandoned her mother and how that's left her with attachment and abandonment issues. All right, so that's where we leave them. So, and I know we're going to end up talking about Messica, right? But let's start with Mark.
Right.
All right. Is he ever going to shut the hell up about this damn Italian beef?
I don't think so, because I think he never ended up getting it. And what is Italian beef anyway? Like, I don't even know. Is it like beef with Italian seasonings?
It's like it's similar to like a Philly cheesesteak, but from Chicago. And I think it has a little bit thicker slices and some other ingredients rather than that. But it's a sandwich. It's a beef sandwich.
That seems pretty basic. It's a Chicago specialty. Yeah, but I feel like anyone can make that.
Yeah, but okay. Okay, so I don't know why this doesn't happen in California, but everywhere else in the country is really, really defensive about their regional specialties, right? Uh-huh. Where we're like,
we don't really have any, I guess.
I know. That's what I'm saying. Like, you know, it's similar to if you talk about barbecue, like, you know, you have your Carolina and Texas and Memphis and Kansas City are all going to like yell at you about how their barbecue is the best, right? And you have regional pizza things. And in Maryland, we're, you know, obsessed about our crabs and stuff. And we have this pit beef. And there's like all these regional specialties that everybody is like cares about.
I guess ours is Mexican food, but I don't like care enough where it's just like, I just know if I go to another state, not to eat their Mexican food.
Interesting. But it's, I don't know how to explain it because there is, Chicago is one of those places that is just like, no, you haven't had it in Chicago. You know, Philly cheesesteaks are the same way. You haven't had it in Philly. It doesn't count. We're the only ones who do it right. Everybody needs to get off. But they're really defensive about it. And I don't know why. It's weird that some parts of the country are like that, but California really isn't. Because you're right. It's like, there's definitely things you're like,
yeah, we defend our Mexican food, and it's just like, I know when I go to other states, it's probably not going to be as good, but I don't really care.
But you would never be like, you would never be in the dating pod and hear they're from California and being like, do you make good Mexican food? that would not be the thing that you would do. How are your tacos? Like, fine, I guess?
They're okay, I guess.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I like some things from other places, but I mean, none that I get like crazy about. And honestly, like I've had Philly cheesesteaks in Philadelphia and I've had them other places. They're the same.
So the funny thing about Philly cheesesteaks in Philadelphia is people always want to get they just have Cheese Whiz on them, by the way. Like it's just, drip Cheese Whiz all the time. You got to get them out of a food truck and like it's a whole thing. But yeah, I mean, being a Maryland person, I will defend our crab over anything. But, you know, that's a different story because we have the best crabs. No, but and the biggest thing you see it with is barbecue. Like regional barbecues, they will fight you.
But I think part of the thing with the Mexican food is that like if you're in another state, they're not trying to say that we have the best Mexican food. It's like, this is your option. If you want Mexican food, we're it.
Yeah, pretty much. Right. It's not like they're like, ooh, it's California Mexican food.
Yeah. Oh, our Mexican food is better than California Mexican food. It's like,
yeah, but you know who would say that? You know who would say that? Texas. Texas would fight you. Texas. On that. And but that's the thing. Yeah, but I mean, Texas would fight you, and California would be. But Californians are just too chill. Like Texas would try to fight you, and y'all would just be like, yeah, whatever, fine.
Okay. Yeah. Sure. Okay. I feel like Mexican food is a little bit different anyway.
It is.
Like
it's
they're really into queso.
It's a different food. Yes.
Yeah. And I'm like, we don't really have queso here. I mean, we do, but it's like, it's not.
I wouldn't get fish tacos. Yeah. I wouldn't get fish tacos in Texas.
Yeah. That would be weird. Yeah. I think we're more into like that fresh Mex they refer to it as, you know?
Sure. I'm hip. Yeah. Yep. All right. Definitely. Anyway. All the ways Jessica messed up. So is it ever a good sign when you are crying so much that you can't come out with your wedding dress on?
It's bad. It's so bad. And I feel like she knew then that she wasn't going through with this wedding.
Yes. Right. Right. And I don't know. I just feel, did she know then? Was this like the final straw? Because I feel like shit's been building up and she's kind of known all along.
I feel like she has too.
And I feel like, I don't know if she was crying.
Because
I mean,
she does have a way out.
Yeah. I don't know if she was crying because she was like really nervous about it, or if she was crying because she felt guilty because she knew she wasn't going to go through with it. And I feel like I'm living a lie. Like, here's me with this dress on, living a lie.
Yeah.
I put my lie on my body and I'm out here now.
Right. No, I think it's that too. Oh, goodness. Okay, so let's talk about Mark real quick. When he is doing his suit shopping, mm-hmm. and he's talking with his friend, and Barnett is just awkwardly standing there as they're like talking. And I'm just like, why are you here?
So we didn't talk about the suit shopping altogether because we talked about the dress shopping. The suit shopping is such a different experience because they're pretty much just like, what do you want? Do you want a suit or a tux? I don't know. And Barnett, like you said, he didn't know what a shoehorn was.
And then what's your size? Yeah.
And then the size. Apparently none of them knew what their suit size was. It was crazy. Yeah. And like, they were all just trying on the different jackets and like they didn't try on pants. I love the tailor. He was like, you guys never dress up fancy,
don't
do you?
Don't dress up much, huh? Well, yeah, he knew Barnett and his shoehorn. Like, what the hell is this? It's like, oh, God. Yeah, okay. Oh. But that conversation specifically stood out in my mind because it seemed like Mark was saying that he slept with Jessica at this point. He definitely implied it.
Oh, I kind of missed that because I was just focused on the friend, the accountant that was like talking there.
Right.
Because he was just being like, why do you want to do this? You're too young. You're too young to get married. You're too young. I'm 29 and I'm not ready. So you're not ready. No, you're not ready. You're too young.
I definitely say that I missed it the first time I watched it. Okay. So this time when I watched it, he never said that they slept together. Mm-hmm. But like I said, he definitely implied, and it was when creepy Barnett was just like awkwardly there. Made me wonder a little bit if the reason why he was implying is because he knew Barnett is just like awkwardly there and he wants to make it seem like, you know, Jessica is his.
I've got it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Like, yeah, we made it. So what he said was he was just like, oh, yeah, like, you know, we just really connected emotionally one of the nights and then it turned into a physical connection.
Mm.
So he said it like that, where they had an emotional connection and then like one night it turned into a physical connection.
Interesting.
And so I don't know, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but it kind of seems to imply like that's the polite way.
That's the implication. But I think you might remember Kenny did something similar early in the episode where you don't actually, you say something that would any reasonable person would jump to that conclusion, but you're like, I never actually said that. So it's your fault that you jumped to the wrong conclusion.
So, yeah. So he implies. And so once again, is he doing it because it actually happened? Or is he doing it because we got Creeper Barnett, like, there, you know, eavesdropping?
Right. Interesting. I don't know if he was actually eavesdropping or not, because he could also strike me as the kind of guy that is just like, oh, you're standing right there? I didn't even see you. Huh. How about that?
Yeah, and I want to say that Barnett doesn't seem like he would care, for one, and for two, that he's even paying attention to their conversation. Barnett seems like the kind of guy who spaces out on the regular. And he's just like staring there with like a dumb, dopey look on his face. And he's like, he really, truly isn't thinking of anything.
Yes. I definitely is not thinking of them. Like, he is not thinking of the people around him. I agree with that. I don't know. Is there really much else? I mean, we kind of are setting up for where we're going. And I feel like, and well, that's the thing. Spoiler. We know where this is going, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's impossible to have been. I mean, the show's been out for a long time. And, you know, there's been enough on the internet that you can't not know what's going on, at least in this particular story.
Right. Definitely. All right. So how about your student of the week then?
I'm with Barnett just because he was chill and I didn't want to give Cameron Lauren again.
guilty.
he just seemed fine. I mean, he you know, didn't stir things up. You know, kind of kept things chill when they could have gotten you know, a little sticky with his family and things like that. I thought he was great with Amber's family.
Yeah, he was pretty good. Definitely. So that's actually why I gave it to Cameron, is because I think he did the best out of everyone with the parents. You're right. He definitely, like, knew how to play nice with the mom, like playing it up like, oh, are you her younger sister kind of deal, you know? Or older sister. And then with the dad, like, was really respectful. And I think it went really well. Like, they both seemed to really like him as well. So, yeah, Cameron, for doing the best with the parents.
Okay.
What about your dunce?
Oh, okay. So I feel like we should just split it, and I don't know who you go with. So I'm going to go with the other one. It's got to be either Jessica or Giannina, right? Like, one of those two. So I don't know which one you picked. So I'll go with Giannina.
I actually picked neither of them.
Oh, really?
Okay.
I'll go with Giannina then, because she was just crazy. Like, she didn't make any sense at all. And, like, and then the funny thing was, she had yelled at him. I forgot to mention this in my reviews. She had yelled at him when he turned off his phone in the weight room. And then as soon as he started talking to her in the restaurant, she picks up her phone off the table and turns it over and starts looking at it. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah, she's
so
the worst.
Hypocritical, nuts. She's just, all right, so who was yours then?
So mine, I actually think I decided based on the first episode, so episode 7. I said it was Amber. And it was because she was incredibly weird and awkward around Barnett's family. And so to me, it's like, well, no wonder they don't like you that much. It's like the fact that she, like, couldn't talk about, or she couldn't talk about anything other than the fact that she was nervous and couldn't stop shaking. It's like, you don't need to tell them this. And her laugh, snore, and just, like, everything. And then in the end, on the second episode, about how she's, like, kind of demanding that Barnett always kind of take her side, that their issues be always kept a secret, which it's like, you're on a reality show. How realistic is this going to be later on? But it kind of makes sense as to what we kind of know today, in that people are constantly speculating if they're still together or not, because they'll be like, oh, well, they haven't posted photos of them recently, you know? And so then he will come out of the woodworks to, like, defend their relationship, like, every once in a while. And I really feel like, well, is it because things are going well, or is it because, like, Amber clearly wants to put out an image that things are going well?
That's true. That's true. So, yeah, with the snorting thing, because we talked about that when she did it, that is clearly her play to get, like, guys to like her, right? And that doesn't work as well with, like, families. That just makes you seem awkward and weird.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, what about your life lesson?
So this was back to Giannina and Damien. Sometimes you just need to disentangle from a fight. Like, when you get to the point where you're not talking, what you're saying to each other doesn't make any sense, you just need to break it up and maybe not take a huge amount of time, but calm down and come back into the fight making sense.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so my life lesson is, you can blame it on the alcohol if you're but if you're always drunk, that's basically who you are. So I kind of feel like Jessica's, like, you know, always blaming it, like, oh, I just drink a lot, I'm sorry, I drink a lot. It's like, but you're always drunk.
It goes back to ancient Rome, in vino veritas. Like, you say, when you're drunk, you say what you really feel. Like,
yeah. But then the problem is if also, if you're always drunk, it's like, I think that's just who you are.
That's
now.
That's just you now. Yeah.
Yeah, that's you. Yeah. All right. So next week, we are covering 9 and 10. Is 10 the tell-all, or is it 9 and 11, 10 and then
it's
a tell-all?
9 and 10 and then the tell-all.
Okay. So maybe we'll do 9, 10, 11 all at the same time then?
Sure. Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay. So we have one more episode of this before we have to figure out what else
we're gonna
do with
next.
Our time.
Right, I know.
All right, we'll figure it out.
We will. All right.
I'll let you all know.
All right, okay. We'll see everybody next weekend.
Okay. Okay, bye.
Bye.